The Conversation. Talk Radio 760 KFMB.
San Diego's talk radio leader, 760 KFMB, presents It's Your Money and Your Life. For the next hour, Richard Muzio and Joe Vecchio will educate and inform you on matters related to your financial future, your life, and your leisure. Now, with It's Your Money and Your Life, here are Richard and Joe.
All right. Good evening, everybody. My name is Joe Vecchio, your co-host, announcer, and producer for It's Your Money and Your Life, coming to you live from the legendary KFMB AM studios in beautiful Kearny Mesa with 50,000 watts of power. We're heard not just in San Diego County, but Orange County, L.A. County, up the coast of Seattle on a good night, out to the desert. And now time to introduce my illustrious co-host. He's a marathon runner. He's a philanthropist. He's the founder of Move Your Feet Before You Eat Foundation in Oceanside, fresh off the turkey trot. He's a family office advisor to several high net worth families, and his name is Richard Muzio. Richard, good evening. How are you tonight?
I am doing great. Got here just before the rain.
Yeah, and I know you had some eye surgery this weekend, and I want to make sure that all went well. So how you doing with that?
Yeah, well, I didn't have any, you know, I lost sight in my right eye, but I've got it back with the surgery, and it's 20/60, but until I get the stitches out, I'm not going to be able to get a contact lens on there, but it was a really good result because we didn't know.
Yeah.
And so we'll see. But so far, so good.
Did you have that at the, are you allowed to say where you had that surgery?
My whole team is with Scripps, but did it over in Hillcrest.
Yeah. Well, you know what? You looked so terrific. If I didn't know you had eye surgery 3-4 days ago, I wouldn't have known.
Yeah, they patched me up really well. No longer have to shave off things like eyebrows and eyelashes.
Yeah.
Which is nice because, you know, in the old days, you'd walk around with one eyebrow and one eyelash.
Yeah. And then, of course, you are fresh off the turkey trot.
Yeah, we got some final numbers on that. We had over 9,000 runners Thanksgiving morning.
Outstanding.
About 14,000 people at the finish line. We raised almost $50,000 for Oceanside Schools and other charities that sort of piggybacked off of our platform. The rumor is they raised about another $50,000 for themselves, which is really super. I ran the 5-miler for Sirius, and then at 8:30, I ran the 5K in a turkey costume.
That's outstanding. Outstanding. Anyway, hey, I got to congratulate our colleagues over on the TV news side. I read the paper over the weekend, and I guess they had some pretty good numbers as far as their news ratings go, like almost number one in all categories. So excellence all around. And
maybe they can afford to buy us some new access cards so we can get into the building.
We will talk with the boss tomorrow and, see what happened. But anyway, thank God for Kevin who got us in the building tonight. So he's running our soundboard this evening. In any case, tomorrow I'm looking forward, by the way, to one of our former guests was a congressman named Bob Filner. And tomorrow he'll be getting sworn in as the 35th mayor of San Diego at 10 a.m. And I'll be honored to be attending there along with the council members who also got reelected. So
Joe, question. I got an email invite from you canceling my invitation. Am I no longer invited to that?
From me? Heck yeah. No, you're invited.
No, I got one that said it was canceled.
No.
Yeah, I did.
Must be something else. You better check with your eye surgeon.
It was the Bob Filner inauguration at 10 o'clock at the Balboa Park Club tomorrow.
Am
I still invited?
You're still invited.
Okay.
I'm sure. We'll make room for you.
Okay. I thought maybe, they canceled the whole thing or something.
No, maybe. Anyway. But look, we just had the current mayor until tomorrow. Mayor Sanders on is a recent guest. And you're sitting in the seat of a former mayor. So Roger Hedgecock's here during the week, as people who listen to this station know. But in any case, hey, we've got two important guests with us tonight, so I don't want to delay any further. Would you like to introduce our illustrious guests?
I can do that. The first is Kurt Gotro, CPA. He came all the way from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, which is a long, long way. He's not the furthest guest away that we've had, but he's close. I think New York City's the furthest. And then his partner, Joel Grushkin, one of our sponsors, Cost Segregation Initiatives. Joel came all the way from Solana Beach. But I think you were just in Texas, right, Joel?
Absolutely, just in Austin.
Okay, so we got one person from Austin, one person from Baton Rouge. So we're going national with this show. We're going to talk about cost segregation tonight, but something even more important to that. If anybody owns real estate that you use for your business or you're an investor in real estate, this is a really, really important show to listen to because the IRS is explaining to us how to, do a lot of things differently than we used to do in the past. But anyway, gentlemen, welcome. Thanks for flying all the way into rainy San Diego.
How about we get into their bios and backgrounds a bit, Richard, and find out
Since Kurt came a little bit further. Kurt, you're an old ex-Arthur Anderson guy, right?
That is correct.
Okay, we won't hold that against you.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Tell us a little bit about your history and why are you doing this thing called cost segregation. But we'll tell everybody what that is after you introduce yourself.
Sure. Thank you. It's great to be in San Diego again. Thanks for inviting me. I basically started at Arthur Anderson in 1981, graduate of LSU, go Tigers. really started in oil and gas taxation. Was a tax specialist at Arthur Anderson as a CPA. Oil and gas led me to real estate taxation, which led me to many real estate clients. For those listening, if you're a real estate owner, cost segregation is something that can substantially defer income taxes for you. So it was a natural for me to be a CPA who dealt with many real estate clients to move into the area of cost segregation.
Yeah, and what we're talking about when we're talking about deferring income taxes is improving the cash flow of owners of real estate. In other words, if you defer income taxes, pay them later, as opposed to earlier, you're going to have more cash flow, especially in the early years when you're owning buildings. And I mean, I think that's, well, cash flow is king these days, so it's very important stuff.
Maybe the only other thing I would like to add, Richard, is as a practicing CPA for many years, clients would come to you at the end of the year and want to know, what can I do to really knock my tax bill down? And we threw out IRAs, and you can make some additional charitable contributions. And they were looking for something that substantially reduced their income taxes.
Yeah,
cost segregation, is one of those items.
Yeah, this is, cost segregation is definitely one of those things. In fact, tax planning is really interesting this year because the old game of deferring income until next year and accelerating deductions into this year doesn't make a lot of sense if tax rates are going up. And guess what? Tax rates are going up next year. So we have a lot of CPAs sort of sitting around going, I'm not quite sure what to tell my clients. Well, if they happen to own real estate, either in their business or commercial investment property, large multifamily housing, senior housing, the list goes on. And Kurt, you drug along your partner, Joel Grushkin.
I did.
All the way from Austin, Texas, via Solana Beach, California. Joel, give us a little bit about your history.
Thanks, Richard. Yeah, basically, I was with the other Arthur, Arthur Young, which is now Ernst & Young since the merger many years ago, focused on the consulting side of the house, but most of our clients were real estate developers, home builders, and that's where I really developed my love of all things real estate, spent a number of years out after leaving Arthur. In operating roles in the home building industry and the development industry, and gravitated then to cost segregation about 8 years ago. And that's when Kurt and I actually met.
Well, you've been in San Diego quite a while, though, right, Joel? How long have you been?
I've actually been in San Diego since 77.
77. So how did you two gents meet? At a conference? Or
I was asked by an investment banker to look at a... an interesting engineering-based business out of Louisiana. And I was always looking at different kinds of deals, and it turned out that this was a little engineering group that was doing cost segregation, and that was the first introduction to it. We spent quite a lot of time doing due diligence to make sure that these benefits were real, because I'd been away from the day-to-day issues of taxation for a while. And after spending some time doing serious due diligence and then looking at how the service was being delivered, we decided that there was a real niche in the market.
So let me throw out an example so our listeners can sort of understand what we're talking about. Let's assume I, Richard, go out and I buy a commercial building that I intend to lease out to commercial tenants. I have to depreciate that over 39 and a half years, right?
39 years.
39 years.
That's right.
The half is for the 27. But anyway, yeah, right. 39 years. So what you see frequently is somebody says, well, okay, we'll allocate 20 or 25% to the land and 75 or 80% to the building, and we'll take about 2.5% of that 80% every year as depreciation, and that's that. But what cost segregation does, well, tell us, what does cost segregation do vis-a-vis 39 years?
Cost segregation, Richard, takes the building and really breaks it down into parts and pieces and allows the commercial real estate owner to depreciate that building over a shorter period of time, thus saving, in some cases, hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars on larger properties
typically in the first 5 or 7 years, there are some benefits to some 15-year windows that we look into, but primarily we're shifting depreciation from those later years into earlier years and really providing capital for the real estate owner or business owner that's operating their business out of their commercial real estate.
So give me an example of something that would be considered 5-year property that's part of a commercial building.
Cabinetry, carpets, flooring, molding, specialty electrical, specialty plumbing, all of these items in a building or in this studio here, we see lots of things that are very highly specialized and are unique to this broadcasting business that, as opposed to depreciating them over 39 years, we can write them off over 5 years. Car dealerships, hotels, restaurants, all of these have very highly specialized assets in their buildings that qualify for huge tax benefits.
How about senior housing?
Senior housing is one of those areas, depending on how the property is built, the quality of development that's done, that can really benefit from cost segregation. We've just been working on a very significant project that is really built like a 4- to 5-star hotel. And there are huge tax benefits to be gained in there.
So you've basically just described all of Southern California: senior housing, auto dealerships, restaurants, and hotels.
And radio stations.
And radio stations.
You know, I think if you look at the things that are non-standard in a building, that's where you really start breaking things out. And it's those non-standard things, as Kurt said, the it's not the equipment in the building, it's the wiring that got pulled in to make the equipment function. And the same thing with the various type of build-outs that get done that is specific to the nature of a business.
One way to think of it, too, for the commercial real estate owner listening to the program, if we could pick our building up and shake it, turn it over and shake it, those items that fall out are desks and chairs and furniture, those your tax counsel or CPA, they're probably already capturing those in 5 years. We're talking about things that we think of as permanently attached or part of the building that we reach into prior to these furnitures and fixtures being moved in.
And so let me ask a question. Why do people need you? Don't CPAs just do this?
I think probably the easiest way to answer your question is I want to ask you, being a CPA, how many CPAs you know that can read blueprints?
Not too many.
and that's really what it comes down to. You've got to be able to really break that building down. And you know, to try to do that just from an accounting perspective, because you think you've got the receipts and all that, you're still going to leave a huge percentage of the tax benefits sitting on the table.
So what you guys do, you combine income tax with engineering, huh? Is that it?
That's basically what it is. It is engineering methodologies. It's using people that can break out all the construction costs as an estimator might do, and really tear the building plans apart and start allocating the various items to the lifetimes that are required by the code.
Well, very good, Joe, but we have to hold that thought. We'll continue when we come back with more of It's Your Money and Your Life after these announcements. All right, we're back with It's Your Money and Your Life with Kurt Gautreaux and Joel Grushkin of Cost Cut Segregation Initiatives and Richard Musio, my co-host. And, hey, if you want to hear this podcast of this show and all shows, go to iymoney.com. There's a broadcast archives tab right there. And just listen away. So anyway, over to you, Richard.
Yeah, and I've got two more presentation videos that Courtney just put up over the weekend on the website, where I talk about the CPA firm of the future, and I also talk about how CPAs can become the most trusted business advisor. So if you happen to be one of those poor clients who are walking around going, I'm not sure I'm getting as much value out of my CPA as I think I deserve, check out my videos on the iymoney.com website. It'll help you, I think, do a better job of finding a resource that works great for you.
Yeah. Well, what was that?
I'm not sure what that was.
Some CPA trying to call in.
Exactly. And we're going to reduce those longer presentations to a couple of YouTube videos so we don't all get electrocuted here. So getting back to cost segregation, How long has this been around? I mean, did this come out of court cases, or how did this all come to be, gentlemen?
Basically, cross segregation. Cross-segregation has been in the tax code since the 60s. It really was never really used because there were so many tax credit programs and all that. And after the 86 Tax Act, when a lot of those things were done away with, still it wasn't being used until about the mid-90s when Hospital Corporation of America and Walgreens both basically came to the IRS and said, we have this massive issue. And in the case of Walgreens, it was about $800 million worth of taxes, and ended up in tax court. The outcome being that, gee, it is really in the tax code. This is legitimate. We can actually do this. And that's really when the whole thing started. And initially, I think there were probably the big six then. Were the first ones to start doing this, along with a couple of appraisal firms. And gradually, more firms started to get involved in the business. And the IRS finally came out with what they call audit guidelines in 2004, because they were afraid everyone and their brother was just going to be pulling numbers out of the air. And the guidelines basically spell out what a compliance study is, who can do it, how it needs to be done. And that's really when the industry really started.
So it's fairly new. Now, there's been some big news recently in the cost segregation world. And, of course, we CPAs really get excited about this stuff. But some what are known as temporary regulations came out earlier this year. Temporary regulations, for those of you listeners who aren't tax code heads and CPAs, those are regulations that the IRS puts out, and then they allow CPAs and tax attorneys and so forth to comment on them with the goal of someday making the regulations final and part of the tax code. But I think it was in March of this year, some regulations came out about cost segregation, but the regulations were maybe a little bit more precise because they also dealt with this thing called repairs and replacements. And some more news has come out about when this stuff gets to be effective. Can you gentlemen sort of get our listeners up to speed on why this is important and what's happened here recently?
Sure. In 2008, well, let's back up a bit. Congress writes our tax laws. A lot of times we like to point fingers at the IRS and really talk about the IRS. Congress writes the laws, and Congress has granted the IRS the authority to issue regulations which interprets laws. In 2008, the IRS issued what we call proposed regulations on what's a repair and maintenance in a building as opposed to what's a something that we must capitalize, as we talked about earlier, and write off and depreciate over a 39-year period, as opposed to something that we write off immediately. A repair is, we think of a repair and a maintenance as a, we paint our buildings, we replace the roofs, all of those things. There was a lot of disagreement between taxpayers, commercial real estate owners, and the IRS as to if I restored my building, if I repaired my building, was it in fact a repair or was it something that I must write off over 39 years? Big numbers, big arguments, big disagreements. So the IRS in 2008 put some proposed regulations together. December 23rd, 2011, the IRS issued temporary regulations on repairs and maintenance. For our listeners, there are about 270 pages of regulations with 155 examples, and Richard's going to cover it in about 29 minutes here shortly.
That's right. So,
before we get to any other 74,000 pages, right, Richard, of the entire code?
Yeah, just adding another few hundred pages. So I was wrong. It wasn't March. It was December. So the temporary regulations that came out then are designed to become final when? Does anybody know?
November 20th, of 2012, the IRS issued an announcement telling really CPAs and commercial real estate owners that they expect these regulations to be finalized sometimes in 2013, and trying to issue some guidance for this 2012 tax season that CPAs and business owners are about to go through. What are we really going to do? How are we going to address these regulations in 2012? How do we address them in 13 and 14? This announcement came really on the heels of our American Institute of CPAs, business owners, NFIB, Small Business Council of the Chamber of Commerce, that these rules were going to be very difficult and burdensome for small businesses to try to apply to their businesses. Today, we're going to talk a lot about real estate and repairs and maintenance, but these apply to equipment, what we call movable property, kind of back to the old shake it if it falls out of the building. Those things that fall out of the building may be machinery and equipment. Repairs and maintenance on those items really are covered in these regulations. But for tonight, we're really going to just focus our discussion about repairs and maintenance on the real estate side.
So I've always thought about the differentiation between being able to expense something immediately as a repair versus having to capitalize it and appreciate it over whatever its useful life is, in this case, 39 years if it's real estate. I've always thought about that differentiation as whether or not the repair improved the asset in question and or extended its useful life. In other words, the ability of the owner to use it longer than if the repair hadn't been made. How do you guys differentiate?
Many court cases really pointed us to two things. One, if it extended the useful life of the building, we were able to look at it as a repair. And if it did not, if it did not extend its useful life, and if it did not increase its fair market value, we thought of that as a repair and maintenance. For example, a roof. We're talking around the issue here. Let's try to get some examples and definitions to it.
Pardon me, Kurt, for cutting in there. We have to take a hard break, though, right now. We'll get back a bit more into this right after new sports weather and these announcements. Stay tuned. We're back on the Ponderosa over here with Richard Musio and Joel Grushkin and Kurt Cottrell. And Richard wants to thank some sponsors.
Welcome back to the ranch. We want to thank our major sponsor, UBS, Mr. Michael Quaranta and Mr. Drew Freitas. Obviously, cost segregation initiatives, they're here tonight. Here with us next week, the best CFO on the planet. That'll be Jason Kruger, CPA with Signature Analytics. Our favorite CPAs on the planet, Paul Polito and Don Epic with Polito Epic CPAs. Rich Gaines and Family Legacy Legal, best estate planning attorney in the known universe. Our favorite bank, Regions Bank, Steve Sefton, Sean Puckett. And of course, last but not least, Mr. Carl Sheeler and Business Valuations Limited. And boy, is Carl busy right now doing valuation discount studies.
Absolutely.
Because of the fact that the estate taxes are going up in January, too.
Yeah. Hey, and if you want to get access to all of our sponsors, just go to iowamoney.com. There's a sponsor tab, and all the information is right there, including tonight's illustrious guest. So, Richard, let's continue.
But getting back to income taxes. Let's get back to income taxes. So before the break, let's look at some examples about this repair and replacement, the importance of this in terms of these proposed, which are now temporary regulations, soon to be final regulations. I own a commercial building, and I'll give you two examples. I decide to paint the outside walls, and I decide to put a new roof on it. How do I handle this?
Well, let's talk about the roof first. If you had the situation where you could get away with perhaps just replacing the membrane over the roof itself, that would be considered not a major component, and that would be expensable. However, if you've got to do the whole roof, tear everything off and actually rebuild that roof, that is definitely going to be something you've got to depreciate. So that's a major component. In terms of painting, an exterior painting is most typically going to be considered a repair, and you'll be able to expense that.
Does that depend on the size of the building, though, or how much money is spent?
Yes, it would, and you've really got to look at that in relationship to the actual structural cost.
I think if we go back, Richard, you used the word improvement before the break. Improvement in real estate and these repairs and maintenance regulation is a very important word. The IRS and these regulations are attempting to define an improvement as something that may better the property. You may adapt that property to a new or different use, or you may restore it. You may go through a major renovation. They use terminology such as material and substantial in nature. If the rehabilitation or restoration is material and substantial in nature, I must capitalize it. I must write it off over a 39-year period as opposed to writing it off immediately. So the focus here with the IRS is moving toward longevity with our improvements that we make to real estate as opposed to something that's currently deductible.
Okay, so let me throw a trickier question at you now that we've sort of, I think, done a good job of defining the difference. Let's assume that I'm totally and completely putting a new roof on, so it's totally and completely everything, not just the outside veneer, but everything. It includes structural, so I clearly have to capitalize it and depreciate it. But I did that, let's put it this way. I bought the building 10 years ago, and it had a roof on it at that time, but I didn't bother to figure out, in terms of allocating the assets that I bought that are part of the building, what the roof cost was of the total cost. Do I have anything to worry about there?
Absolutely, and let's take it in two pieces. One, let's talk about roof and use it in the framework that the IRS is using in the regulations. A cost segregation firm would think of a roof as a system, and it would consist of rafters, insulation, decking, tar paper if it's a shingle roof, and shingles. That's the system. In that instance, we must capitalize, as Joel mentioned earlier, all of those items and write them off over a 39-year period. However, you bring up a very good point. Do I really now have to depreciate two roofs, Kurt, or can I really get rid of one of these roofs? For the first time, really, since we've had depreciation of real estate, we think of real estate as one big structure. The IRS is now allowing in these new regulations for me to sort of dig into that 39-year one number. If it's a $2 million building, I can now go back and allocate, let's say, $100,000 to my old roof, and I now have the ability to deduct the old roof, the part that I have not written off. I now can write it off currently, but I must take the new rafters and decking and plywood and shingles, capitalize those, put them on a new schedule, and deduct them over 39 years.
But I can't just randomly write off the old one, right? I've got to do some form of study to ascertain of my original purchase price what part I could have allocated to the roof had I done that to begin with?
Richard, you're correct. What really has to happen is you really have to go in and determine what that roof was valued at the point of your acquisition of the building.
Yeah, because here's a typical thing you'll see on a depreciation schedule for listeners. I'm a CPA, so I see this all the time. Somebody buys a commercial building for $2 million. Line item number one is land, $400,000, and line item number two is building, $1,600,000. And that's it on your depreciation schedule.
Absolutely. And that's what the first thing we look at when we're asked to determine whether or not it makes sense to do a cost segregation study on the building. What a cost segregation study, if done correctly, will yield is a breakout of all of the various systems in that building and put values on them that were the values at the point of acquisition. So you'd have a value for the roof, and the various components of the roof will be broken out as well.
So other examples of systems would be things like elevators or heating and air conditioning?
Absolutely. There are 8 systems involved. HVAC, plumbing, the escalators would be considered a system. Security would be a system. All the elevators, electrical, fire protection and alarms, and gas distribution.
That's a lot of stuff.
It's a lot of stuff.
I haven't seen too many depreciation schedules that look like that.
Well, you won't see it typically now, but that data is available if a study has been done, it's been done correctly. But there's been no real reason to break it out that far for your depreciation schedule.
So I'm reading these temporary regulations, and it says that I guess it was intended to have an effective date for, let's just call it tax year 2012, but now we can sort of wait until tax year 2014. And so I was talking to a CPA last week who will go unnamed to protect the guilty. And he said, Richard, why should I worry about this stuff now when it's technically not effective until 2014? And of course, I'm sarcastic. I said, well, maybe because that way you could do things right now instead of waiting 2 more years to do things. But Kurt, go ahead.
I think it's always important to look at opportunity. One of the reasons, if you're a commercial real estate owner and working with your CPA, that you may want to look at this today is if maybe in 2008 I've had a major repair, or I did a major replacement of my roof or my plumbing system or my HVAC. A good cost segregation study will do two things for you now. Number one, it's going to take that building, as we said earlier, and take it and break it down into those components, number one. Number two, a good firm is going to go back and identify those assets that were removed from the building that we now can take and we can write off. What the IRS has recently announced is if you want to, you can defer implementing these regulations until 2014. Let's not get too confused here. If I delay implementing the rules until 2014, but I have an event that occurs in 2012, when my CPA gets my 2014 information for my return, he's going to have to go back to 2012, look at what took place, and make those corrections and those adjustments on my 2014 return. If we're looking for opportunity and upside, we're looking for tax savings, it's all of the repairs and maintenance that maybe I capitalized or put on my depreciation schedule since I've owned my building that now creates opportunity for me to have some write-offs, generate some additional cash for the business today as opposed to generating it 2 years from now.
Yeah, see, I perceive it as an opportunity because one of the challenges in the CPA space now is because of this thing called Circular 230 and the fact that the IRS doesn't have a lot of resources to monitor whether taxpayers are complying. CPAs have to do a lot more of the compliance for the IRS than they've ever had to done before. So a lot of CPAs tend to be fairly, conservative would be the word, and they basically capitalize almost everything. So that they can never get in trouble or their clients can never get in trouble. And to me, this is now an opportunity for CPAs to actually have a rigorous method or a rigorous approach to actually knowing what you can expense. Wouldn't you agree?
I agree. All tax preparers are certainly paying attention to Circular 230. It's something that we must deal with as preparers. This clearly is an option for your tax preparer, for your CPA. They can apply the rules as we know them today under these temporary format, which may have a lot of benefit to you, or they can wait until 2014 and apply what we'll call the final regulations. And there's really a third option. We can take the final regulations, which we are expecting the IRS to release March, April, May of 2013, and apply those in 2012. So there's, once again, great planning opportunities for commercial real estate owners in this space.
Yeah, and again, I think for CPAs who want to differentiate themselves, if you're on top of this and ahead of the game, you're going to get more business, and if you're not, you're not. And so to me, it's a huge opportunity for CPAs to increase the value that they provide to their clients, and it's a huge opportunity for owners of commercial real estate to improve their cash flow now, not in 2014. And so why not take advantage of the opportunity, even though I know this stuff is somewhat complicated.
Outstanding. Richard, we're going to take another break
okay,
right
let's
now.
Do that, Joe.
It's our last break, and we'll be right back with the last segment of It's Your Money and Your Life.
Can I shake this building and turn it upside down?
why don't we do that after the show? All right, we're back with the last segment of It's Your Money and Your Life. And if you would like to contact our guest tonight, Joel Grushkin or Kirk Cottrell, their website is costseganalysts.com. The phone number is right up there, 858-792-7810. These guys are the experts and the wizards. If you or anybody you know is involved with commercial real estate, you really got to get in touch with these guys. Right, Richard?
Yeah, they do great work. I've used them before. That's one reason why they're on the show, because they're the best in the business. I used to say west of the Mississippi, but isn't Baton Rouge east of the Mississippi? No, they're the best in the country. So we didn't even mention this. We're talking about these proposed regs that became temporary regs that will soon be final regulations on repairs and replacement. But CostSeg is a huge opportunity to improve cash flow retroactively, right? I mean, because let's assume I bought my building in 2009 and I didn't do this identification of the different component pieces. I can do that now, right?
Absolutely. That, in spite of what these temporary regs are saying, it hasn't changed the ability to go back and do what's called a look-back study. And as long as you acquired your building after January 1 of 87, we can go back, do a look-back study, recompute all the depreciation expense using our methodologies, and pull forward what you haven't taken advantage of. And you get to take the difference between what your straight-line depreciation has given you and what you could have taken had you done a study from the very, very beginning. Right at the time of purchase.
And I don't have to amend tax returns, right? I can pick that all up, for example, on my 2012 return?
Absolutely. No amendments necessary. Very simple process. A change in accounting form is filed with your tax return, and it's
an automatic. Form 3115, right?
3115.
All right, I know my form. Yeah, so that's a huge opportunity because I think a lot of people are in that situation. I know that for a fact. All right, so here's another question. So let's assume that I'm a investor in commercial real estate, and I don't know if my CPA is doing this or not doing this. What kind of discussion should I be having with my CPA? What should I be looking out for?
I think the discussion I would have with my CPA is to, one, ask for your information. Your information is your depreciation schedule, your assets, part of your tax return, to look and see if your CPA has taken your building and broken it down, into many different components. You should see 8, 9, 10 line items on your asset schedule as opposed to one schedule. And remember, if you look at the schedule and see equipment, desk, furniture, fixtures, those are things that we expect your tax preparer to move into five-year property. We're talking about things outside, back to the shaking the building, turning it upside down. We're back to that thought process when we look at depreciation schedules.
So I should see elevator, I should see electrical, I should see plumbing system, I should see roof, potentially. Those are examples. The examples you gave before would be examples of things I should see on my depreciation schedule.
That is correct. You may see, if someone's performed a quality study, you may see assets that are listed as 39-year assets that are broken out from the building. For example, roofs and elevators are still 39-year property. It's important that we break those numbers out and really break down into some high level of detail now post repair and maintenance regulations to specifically and very granularly define those assets so that if you replace the elevator, you replace the escalator, you replace the roof, you have the ability to dispose of the Owen and generate some immediate savings for your client.
Yeah, and I don't think this is happening with the regularity it should be happening. That's why I think this is so important, and that's why I think it's so important to take advantage of the temporary regulations now, not in 2014. Because I think it will greatly increase the value that CPAs are providing to their clients and greatly improve the cash flow that real estate owners get out of the buildings that they own.
Joel and I, Richard, post-regulations are even going into greater detail in our reports. For example, we're listing maybe electrical conduit by linear feet. We're listing walls by square feet. Think about going into a studio such as this one, and we've decided to reconfigure this room and several other offices. We're going to start moving walls, tearing out carpet, tile, flooring, ceiling joists. If we break those items out in great detail in our report and give some unit of measure, square foot, linear foot, we're allowing the CPA, or if we need help at that point in time, to go in and grab the sheetrock, to grab the stud walls, the metal studs, all the stuff we took out and threw away in our renovation. It's going to really generate a much higher deduction for our clients. Again, business owners are looking for capital. We're always looking for capital to expand and grow our businesses. And this is an opportunity in the repairs and maintenance regulations to generate real tax savings for our clients.
And I think you sort of mentioned this, but I want to be clear on this. You suggested that you believe the final version of the regulations will not look very much, if at all, different than this temporary version. Is that correct?
Anytime we see the IRS announce that you have the ability to apply the 2014 regulations on your 2012 tax return, it must mean that they're going to issue those regulations soon. And if they're going to take 270 pages of regulation and get them out soon, I think we can expect very little change in its final version. Remember, 2012 tax returns on extended due dates will be due around that September, October 2013 time frame. So everyone in the all the CPAs are beginning to believe the IRS is going to issue the regulations in the near future. They told us in this announcement in November that they would, so that if we want to implement them in final format in 2012 on these tax returns, we can. To get them out that fast, I don't think you can change them a whole lot.
Yeah, I agree. So explain to our listeners how you work with CPAs to help make the lives of CPAs better.
Well, I think the key is that we are there to really aid the CPA firm. We are the specialists in real estate. We can't expect the CPAs to have the background to read the blueprints and break out the kind of detail that, it's really been hasn't been as required as it will be now. It's always been a nice to have. Now it's going to be a need to have. And it's pretty seamless. We're really behind the scenes with some of the CPA firms we work with. Other than the fact that we go out and have to inspect the buildings and all that, we don't have to have a great deal of interface with the owner or their staff. And it's really something that we're providing for the CPA so that they can deliver a better product to their client.
Thank you, Joe. Unfortunately, we're out of time, gentlemen.
Already?
But yes.
Already?
But go to iymoney.com if you want to get this podcast. Get a hold of Kurt or Joe with Cost Segregation Initiatives. Anybody involved with commercial real estate, they'll save you a ton of money. In any case, thank you, Kevin Terrell. Thank you, Dave Sniff, our program director. Thank you, Craig Blanke and Carmen Sheely and everybody here at KFMB. Have a great night and have a great week, and we'll talk to you next Sunday. Good night.
I'm so good at ringing this bell. Mike Slater here from 760's Morning Show, here to tell you about something very special that we're doing with the Salvation Army this holiday season. Today, the motto of the Salvation Army is doing the most good. Right now, there is an unprecedented number of people here in San Diego, families and children, who are on tougher times than we've ever seen before. The Salvation Army has that promise to do the most good to the most amount of people who are in the most need. So how are we going to do the most good? When you donate to the online Red Kettle Drive at 760kfmb.com, you raise funds to support important programs and services right here in San Diego. To put it simply, you'll be doing the most good. Please go to 760kfmb.com, click on the giant red kettle, and donate online today. And thank you for supporting the Salvation Army as they continue to do the most good.
Join Mike Slater for